Hello and welcome to Tanner Talks, where we share topics of interest for our patients from physicians at Tanner Clinic. My name is Jason Hoagland, pediatrician. I will be your host for this episode. I'd like to welcome Dr. Ryan Evans, who's been my mentor and partner for the past 20 years over at Tanner Clinic, and just thank him for doing this episode on RSV today. So thanks, Ryan.
Oh, you're sure welcome, Jason. Thank you for being such a great partner all these many years.
Oh, you bet. So
I love having you down the hall from me, and you and I running from room to room.
it's been a good dance for a lot of years.
So, yeah,
lots of fun. So what got you to Tanner Clinic? What was your pathway to getting to Tanner from your background and everything?
Well, I went to medical school at the University of Utah, and then I did my residency at the University of Minnesota. I wanted to get back closer to family. Grew up in Salt Lake City, and really was looking for jobs, and happened to get the option of interviewing at WeCare Pediatrics, which was a very different place back then, just like most things. And in passing, the person who was looking to get jobs said, well, there's a place across the street that's also hiring. I was like, oh, okay, I'll go over and talk to them as well. And I spent my half day at WeCare, and it was fine. And then went over to what happened to be Tanner Clinic in Layton. It was the only Tanner Clinic at the time. And, met with them, and then spent a few hours with Frank Kramer, who was really kind of our original pediatrician, and saw the way he practiced medicine and said, that's how I want to practice medicine. And I was, that was the end of it. I signed with Tanner Clinic. They said, hey, would you like to start at a new clinic? We're opening a new clinic in Kaysville. And not knowing anything about Davis County or the area, I was like, and being a brand new resident or physician out of residency, I said, sure, send me wherever. And now 26 plus years later, here I am still at Kaysville Tanner Clinic, and really blessed. So
it's amazing, our careers in medicine, that we really get your office, your desk, and then you work there for 20, 30 years and not a lot of change, but just a lot of great experiences serving people.
Yeah. It is interesting. I think many people have many different vocations, and I've had the same job for almost 30 years now. Yeah. And I think I might be the oddball in that I've done this for this long, and both you and I have, So
it's been a good ride for sure. And so,
yeah.
Well, thank you so much for helping out. RSV is just on the rise in Utah, and it's becoming the topic of discussion for really all of our moms and parents. And so thank you for doing some education about RSV. You've been taking care of kids with RSV for 26 years and doing a great job with them. And so what is RSV?
Well, RSV is one of many respiratory viruses that circulate every year, typically in the winter. Typically RSV, which stands for respiratory syncytial virus, will appear in December and January and peak in February, and then kind of start to disappear in March and April. And with the pandemic, everything's been thrown off kilter, and last year it appeared in August and September, and this year here it is in October and November. And I really wonder if we're kind of at the peak time, because there are so many cases right now, even as you and I speak. So
yeah, it was so interesting, the change in timing after the pandemic. And so you mentioned that this is one of many respiratory viruses. So why does RSV get such a bad reputation compared to other colds?
Well, first of all, it's the way this virus works. The syncytial, that S, the letter S in there, it tends to cause a lot more inflammation in the lungs. And that in turn tends to really kind of gum up those airways, and that will cause more breathing problems for more children. And specifically for the youngest children, certainly under age two, but definitely under 12 months and 6 months. And this is one of those viruses that will affect even the very, very young. And they're really, as you and I have both seen, at the highest risk, and can be in the most danger with this virus. And it really is just because there's so much inflammation, mucus, plugging. It makes it so a baby has a hard time getting oxygen into his or her lungs and carbon dioxide out. And that leads to difficulty breathing, a hard time eating, a hard time sleeping. And so it's just, it's a more angry or aggressive virus than some of the others in most cases. Yeah.
I think that when I talk to parents and they can see how much mucus is coming out of their child's nose, and we talk about, how that lining tissue is that the respiratory lining is what's being attacked, and the mucus you see in their nose is happening in their lungs. They really understand how much this is an airway plugging disease that is just different from everything else. I totally agree. And you mentioned who gets RSV. So sometimes adults think, we don't get RSV, but so who gets RSV?
Oh, everybody. And you and I know that really by about age two or so, almost every infant, almost every child will have gotten this illness. So it's ubiquitous. And of course you can get it again and again, because like most viruses, RSV will mutate and evade your immune system a little bit. And so it comes back. And for you and me, and for, older children and young adults, it's just a bad cold, more coughing for a little bit longer, more runny nose, congestion, things like that. But it's the really young ones that will struggle the most, mostly because their airways are smaller and more easily plugged up. So
I've said the same things to parents, just because their airways are so small that the mucus that isn't a big deal for you or me is a really big deal when your airways are really small.
Yep.
Yeah. So what are the symptoms of RSV that are different from regular colds in terms of what's actually happening in terms of symptoms we're getting, and maybe talk about bronchiolitis as a diagnosis.
Yeah. Really RSV will start out looking like pretty much any other virus in my book, runny nose, congestion, sometimes a fever. Oftentimes the fever is mild. It's not significant, although it can be high. And then over a period of 3 to 5 days, things just worsen. That congestion, that runny nose, that cough seems to worsen, moves farther down in the chest as the mucus plugging, the inflammation worsens. And then usually there's about a 3 to 5 day period of time where a child's at their worst. And then after another 3 to 5 days, they kind of pull out of it. And so the whole process takes about 10 to 14 days. But for the most part, it being a respiratory illness, there's going to be runny nose, congestion, cough, sore throat, maybe some fever, things like that.
Have you heard your parents sometimes say that they're worried their child's cold will turn into RSV, like a quote?
All the time.
I hear that all the time. Yeah. And so how do you talk to your parents about that?
Usually just some gentle tweaking in that letting them know that whatever virus this is, it can't change itself. It's more, if they got it, they got it.
Right.
And if it won't turn from some other virus to RSV. I don't know if I explained that as well as I could, but there are so many other viruses out there. Once you get one, you're going to get that and go through that illness. And if it's RSV, you got it. You either have it or you don't have it, I guess.
Yeah. And that's what I've tried to go with my parents, exactly that, because I think so many get a runny nose and congestion and they worry that that's going to turn into RSV, not recognizing that RSV is a very specific disease, as you've said. And it's not like turning into pneumonia or turning into an ear infection. It's either you have it or you don't. And what about for adults? What would adults have as a symptom for if they had RSV?
Well, fairly similar. It'll be just basically a bad cold with some runny nose, congestion, coughing, sore throat, maybe a mild fever. Laryngitis. Really all of the upper respiratory symptoms, the cold symptoms that we tend to get 1 to 2 to 3 times a year as adults, you know.
And that sure makes it difficult when you wonder what if that cold that a parent has is RSV as a specific virus, and does make it difficult. And so,
yeah, and oftentimes it is, they bring it home.
Yeah, for
or
sure.
The older sibling. That's the usual one.
Well, and you kind of alluded to it in some of the timing on RSV, but when should parents worry about the symptoms your child's having, maybe being RSV?
Yeah. With the really young ones, especially under 2 to 3 months, sometimes they will stop breathing and there's no way of knowing that. That's always a bit more worrisome for you and me. But generally, children, as they have a harder time breathing, will have a harder time eating, a harder time sleeping. They'll become more fussy. Parents may notice that they're sucking in their chest more when they breathe, that they're working harder when they breathe, maybe they're looking a little more pale, something like that. So that's what we would be looking at, a more fussy baby, a baby that's having a hard time sleeping or eating or consoling, and then the breathing, that faster, more labored breathing.
Yeah. And I have a lot of first-time moms that when they hear about RSV, they're really worried they're going to miss it. But I've got to say, in 21 years, I've never had a parent miss when their child wasn't doing well. I try to reassure them that their good observations will lead them to go to their doctor, you know, go to the ER if they need to. But I think they're worried they're going to miss it. Something bad's going to happen to their child.
No, and that's where you and I are so lucky. We have such a good patient base. They're smart. They're well-informed. They care. They love their children. And so they're going to be watching so closely. And because of that, you and I find out and know quickly when, you know, a child's starting to become distressed. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, what are some things that a parent can do at home for really any cold, but especially for RSV? What are some home management techniques?
I often tell parents that, of course, over-the-counter cough and cold medications have never been shown to work very well. So they're not really necessary. That's hard because we want to do something for our little patients when they're not feeling well. Really, about the best we can do is have the parents suction out their noses, drop some saline drops in their noses, run a humidifier maybe. If the copious secretions are significant enough. There are the respiratory clinics at each of the hospitals. They can go in there. It's reassuring because the respiratory therapist will check the baby's or the child's oxygen and suction them out. And that really seems to make a difference, at least in my experience.
Yeah, I've had patients admitted to the hospital where they've just had so much congestion and just needed that tough love of getting the saline and suctioning. And they've gotten a little bit dehydrated because they couldn't drink very well. And so that good home care. And then we really loved having those respiratory outpatient clinics to be an adjunct to help out with sometimes the more serious suctioning needs. And it really, I think, made a huge difference in keeping kids out of the hospital.
Yeah. Most of the parents agree. They'll come back to me and I'm sure to you and say, man, the suctioning made a big difference. They could breathe, they could eat, they could sleep, you know. Yeah. So
it's amazing how much it really is a disease of lots of mucus and snot in their nose. And so much. Yeah. So is there any group that's at higher risk that parents could know, hey, my child might be at higher risk of having some complications from RSV?
Yes. If your child was born prematurely, and specifically if your baby was born prior to 32 weeks of gestation, or if your baby has some other underlying lung or heart disease, that does put them at a higher risk for having more severe illness if they were to get RSV. So,
yeah. And do you see anybody as far as eczema and asthma that can be a little more prone to complications?
Yeah, It is the case that if there is certainly a family history of asthma, of seasonal allergies, of eczema, you know, the allergic triad, it's possible that offspring, that the child or the infant may have a more severe case. It may portend more wheezing, maybe more of an asthma response. That's for sure.
Sure. So when would you recommend that one of your patients come in and see you? When should you see your doctor?
Well, of course, if the parents are really worried, I would always say come in. But you know, once again, the child's maybe not eating as well. They've been running a fever for a little longer than I might expect, maybe longer than 2 to 3 days. They're not sleeping well. They're acting more fussy. They're not drinking well, not nursing well, or not, you know, taking formula, those sorts of things in the younger groups. In the older groups, and for any of them, I would also add, if they've just been sick for a long time and there doesn't appear to be any end in sight, they should come in and see us.
Mm-hmm.
Most viruses run their course in about 10 days or so. If it's been going on longer than that, maybe it's time to come in and make sure we're not missing something, you know? Yeah,
definitely. Anything that people can do to help prevent RSV in their little infants and young children?
Well, it comes down to all the same things we did during the pandemic, which is distancing, mm-hmm. washing hands. I always tell my parents, especially like you were alluding to, Jason, those first-time parents who are really freaked out and holidays are coming up, what do I do in these cases? And I tell them, if you don't feel comfortable, don't go out. And I always follow two rules: make sure everybody washes their hands before they hold your baby. And if they're sick, they just can't hold your baby.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that's really why we traditionally see a peak of respiratory infections about mid-January, because you had Thanksgiving and Christmas and New Year's, everybody's gathered with all their germs and their colds. And they haven't been good about staying home because it's a once a year occasion. And then about 2 to 3 weeks later, everybody's sick. So it's,
yeah. Absolutely.
Well, wonderful. You know, it's I think we have this sense of this huge surge of RSV, and so why do you think there's been so much RSV this year since the pandemic's over and those kind of things? What do you think has made a difference in why we have so much RSV, strange timing, so much higher numbers?
Well, if you remember, and I certainly remember, 2020, 2021 was a zero year because we were all at home. We were distancing, we were wearing masks. And so there was almost no RSV. There were almost no ear infections, almost no influenza, anything like that. So we have this population over the last few years that hasn't been exposed to as many viruses as they might otherwise have been exposed to. And so, gosh, all of these viruses were still out there waiting in the wings, ready to go. And now that we have, really, this is the first year without any restrictions. Everyone's coming back together. And so they've decided to come back too. All these viruses, they're ready to affect us again.
Yeah.
Infect us again.
Yeah. And I've heard that term have been used, either immunity gap or immunity debt, that we're paying back right now. And I think you mentioned it earlier in the conversation where you can get immunity for a year or two. And I think where nobody had any exposures and no one's immune system was prepared to manage RSV when it came around, that people of every age are getting it now. And then mm-hmm. the littlest kids are being hit the hardest because they're the most vulnerable. But it's just, we're paying back that debt of not having RSV for so many years, that now we're experiencing it in really high numbers. And I think we can provide some reassurance to parents that this will get back to normal at some point in time. It's just a really bad year, but definitely an exception. I won't keep doing this over and over again.
Right. Yeah, it's true. There are just a lot of folks that are going to get this illness. If we know that pretty much everybody gets it at some point, I know that's a bit fatalistic, but it's going to happen. And we have to be ready. Yeah,
and will happen again and again. And, you know, we'll keep managing it going forward and we'll be fine. But just, I think we are just dealing with higher numbers, but it's,
yes.
it's not the end of the world, and we'll be good going forward. So
yeah, and that's a good point in that, remember that even though it is a dangerous illness, almost everybody that gets it sails through it and gets through it in 10 to 14 days and feels better. And very few really, when we look at it, end up in the hospital with more severe illness. Thank goodness.
Yeah. And I've said that, I think, you know, most colds don't end up in the hospital, and even RSV, the numbers I've always quoted that for about 98%, it's just a really, really bad cold. Yep. And for that 2% end up in the hospital. And it just, when it's 2% of everybody, that's a huge number.
It is
a lot bigger number than common rhinovirus or something similar, but it just, it should be respected, but 98%, it'll be one of the worst colds you have, but you'll get through okay.
Yes. Yeah. I always like to think about that as well. If you're unlucky enough to be that one or two out of the 100, that's unfortunate, but most get through it. And I've been talking to patients over the last few weeks who have had young ones that have gotten through it and are feeling better and looking great back to themselves.
Yeah.
That's always reassuring, you know?
Well, hopefully we can give a little bit more information here to parents and with their little kids, and it provides some degree of reassurance and support that there's some tools to work with at home. There's some community tools. You have, there are good physicians at Tanner Clinic that are available to help you out and be a resource for you. And so, and Dr. Evans is one of the best. And so thanks, Ryan, for taking your time tonight.
Thank you for having me, Jason. I'd love to come on again at some point for another podcast.
Sounds great. Well, have a good night, Ryan. Talk to you later.
All right. Good night.
Bye-bye. Thank you for joining us. We hope you have enjoyed this episode of Tanner Talks. We look forward to getting together again next time. We want to thank Tara Cooper and Doug Larson, who helped in the production of this podcast. The opinions expressed in this podcast, while carefully considered, are ultimately the opinions of the presenters and not necessarily of Tanner Clinic. And remember, the content of this podcast shouldn't be seen as a substitute for seeking actual personal medical care. If this is an emergency, hang up and dial 911. Otherwise, schedule a visit with a caring doctor to help with your medical needs.